Welcome, everyone. There are many things in life that are completely beyond our control, but we do have control over the actions we take in the face of adversity. One of the helpful things we can do is cultivate a sense of resilience in ourselves. My guest today, Bob Litwin, is a true example of how the power of resilience can help us move through life's most difficult challenges and emerge even stronger. Bob is a world tennis champion and a coach to thousands of people from all walks of life. He recently published Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change, which helps everyday people make extraordinary life changes. Bob will share with us his personal story and give us insight on how we can build our own resilience and take control of how we rebound from trauma and tragedy. Bob, welcome to the show. I'm so grateful to have you on, and I loved your book, and it's just an amazing story. So I'm very happy to have you here today.
Oh, well, Eric, it's great to be on with you, really. I mean, I've read your website. It's like you're doing such great work. And we're kindred spirits, because I think that it seems like we're both about really helping people, and that certainly is what fills my bucket.
Absolutely. And you know, for just every time I've been, you know, looking at your work through the week, it just keeps coming back to this. And I want to talk about resilience, but it keeps coming back. This word keeps coming up for me of reframing your life and reframing your thoughts. Even just this morning, when we first got on the phone, you said, "Oh, I'm looking at the Rockies." You know, what a it's like a beautiful sight. You could look at anything in life and see the beauty in it, and see the and have the gratitude for it. Or we could look at it a different way. And so I just wanted to kind of start with, is that something that came natural to you, to kind of reframe things into seeing things as beauty and positivity?
Well, I think the background is kind of interesting. I was a tennis pro at a club on Long Island. It was a golf and tennis club, so I was the tennis guy, and for 35 years I taught tennis. And everybody who came to me for a lesson, they wanted to be better at something. I mean, whether it was their forehand or backhand, or their attitude, or their fitness, or whatever it was. But I would be with them for an hour, and they would, mostly because what we were working on was things they were not really good at, or they weren't that kind of person yet, they had a lot of difficulty. It wasn't coming that easily for them. So when they'd say, "Oh, it's not working," I would reframe it. I would say a different story. I'd say, like, "Well, the ball's going deeper than it went last week," or right, "You're more patient this week than you were last week." So, you know, I spent many, many, many hours trying to change people's stories around to those that would tend to get them staying on the path to doing the work.
Right, exactly. So,
I was going to say that actually the phrase that I use more is just tell a different story. It is reframing, but I've never really attached that much to that particular word. I was doing a talk last week, and people said, "So these are goals, right?" And I said, "Well, call it what you will. I call it stories, because I see that the stories that I tell myself either keep me where I am or free me up to go forward to another place." So stories seem to be something that fits for me, it resonates for me, and I kind of stick with that word. But it is reframing, basically.
Yeah, but I do appreciate the word stories too, because I think a lot of us have these stories that we have about ourselves, how we view ourselves, what we're worthy of, what we're capable of. And like you said, I think that is, it could be reframing, but I think more powerful, the word stories is to tell yourself a different story that you know, you are worthy, you are capable, you can achieve something, versus telling yourself, you know, the opposite. So,
right. And I would say that it may even be more about telling a story of who you need to be in order to get things done that you want to get done, or to get what you want in your day or in your life or whatever space you're working on. You may need to be a certain kind of person. So that somebody who says, "Oh, I need to go to the gym. I joined a gym and I've hired a trainer. I'm going 4 days a week." I always kind of shake my head a little and go, like, "Well, that really hasn't worked that well for a lot of people. Maybe what you need to work on first is to be a master of self-discipline." And that by becoming somebody with self-discipline, then you do the things that are necessary to get health. Is that it's not, don't start with the action as much as start with the being that you need to become. And that's mm-hmm. kind of fun stuff to work on anyhow.
Yeah, so for people listening and wondering, because I'm wondering this as you were saying this, you know, what is that first step to mastering your being?
To mastering your being? Well, the first thing is to do what you can to get clear on what stories that you're telling yourself that aren't working. So let's say somebody is like, well, I'm so impatient. Okay, well, then what about if you flip that story to my middle name is Patience? And you get to work throughout the day. You get and you say, okay, that's on my to-do list today to work towards becoming somebody whose middle name is Patience. So there are plenty of opportunities throughout the day for us to work on it. If you're waiting for an elevator rather than hitting the button 8 times, you could do something like take a deep breath or count to 10 or talk to somebody who's waiting for the elevator. And then you're strengthening that patience muscle for those times that you need it in bigger, tougher situations.
Right, absolutely. So that's like kind of also intention setting and being mindful, being aware, right? Yeah.
Well, it sure does take being mindful. I think that I always say to my clients, like, keep that list attached to the front of your eyelid so that you're looking at it all the time, that you're remembering that in your day of work or any sort of activity, that you're remembering what your intention really is. That you don't just say, this is my intention, but you keep reminding yourself throughout the day. It doesn't really take time away from what you're doing. It's just like sort of expanding your capacity to be noticing when there are opportunities to move closer to your intention.
Right, right, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I actually visualize it like that. I keep things in the front of my mind, and I not into my eyelids, but to like the front of my forehead.
I do
relate to that analogy very well. And you know, when it comes to resiliency and getting through, you know, hard times that are naturally just going to come in life because, you know, there's a lot of things we can't control. And I know, I mean, your own story has tons of, colors and shades of resilience in it, but how do people begin to see that, you know, they have to walk through things in order to see the contrast of what they're capable of? Because if we don't, if we avoid, you know, feeling uncomfortable or we want to cut corners, or we want to walk around it, not through it, then we never really get a chance to see what we're capable of, what our strengths really are.
Well, look, things are thrown in our path for whatever reason. The universe or whatever, whoever, throws things in our path. And we really can't avoid them. I mean, we can deny them for a while, but you can't avoid what's in front of you because we keep going forward in life. And if we keep banging up against the same thing over and over again, it's not avoiding it. It's just not going through it. So for me, I mean, there were 3 or 4 major things in my life that felt like big obstacles or difficult situations that I just knew that I needed to, like, have a different story about them. I mean,
can you give an example? Really do you mind sharing?
Very, very, very briefly. The first one was that I was teaching tennis. It was a low self-esteem job at a club. I wasn't really respected, except in a very, very small way that I was a good tennis player. But I felt like hired help. And I knew that that wasn't really working for me. I didn't want to spend my life feeling like that. So that was an obstacle. And I needed to change things around rather than being like envious of other people who had jobs that seemed more important or serious. Mm-hmm. At one point, I realized, wait, I'm teaching life skills to these people that I want to be like. And all of a sudden, I saw myself in a different way. So that wasn't a horribly awful situation. But the biggest awful situation that I was facing within my life was that my wife, Carol, had breast cancer, which at the outset, breast cancer is terrible. Of course, when you first get that kind of news, it's terrible, terrible news. But then within a week or two, and you look at statistics and you say, oh, well, you know, actually she'll be all right. And most people get through it. But But the initial stages of it were ones where I was waking up in the morning saying, it's not fair. Why is this going on? Why us? Why didn't she eat more carefully? Not that that's why she got breast cancer, but I had all these things going on that were about resisting what really was, which was she had breast cancer. And I had had the good fortune of training for tennis for many years, where I needed to be strong physically and mentally, emotionally and spiritually in order to get good results. So I didn't have those things in place. I somehow would be like coming up short. And then I realized, wow, all that training in my life was for this match. This is the toughest match that I will ever face, at least up until that point. There may be more difficult ones down the road. So what I did was I kind of thought, like, all right, this is just another difficult situation like other things I've been in. I welcome this because I've been training for it. I'm ready for it. And every day I would get up and basically say, bring it on, because I know that I can be a better version of myself and that this, in fact, will make me a better person. That however it turns out, I will grow from this. I will be a more evolved human being. And that really is what happened. Every single day we were faced with all kinds of challenges. Of course, it was much tougher for her. She was sick. She was dealing with mortality. I was dealing with the fear of her maybe not surviving, but she was dealing with it on a whole different level. But for me, I knew that I needed to be the best version of myself. And in order to be the best version of myself, I needed to take it on and say, I want this. If I was resisting it, all I was doing was whining and complaining, and then I would go to the doctor's offices, and I'd be upset with them as if it was their fault, and I would be frustrated, I'd be irritated, I'd go to work, I wouldn't be my best version. So I kind of thought, like, all right, here's a chance for me to be a world champion in a different way. And that is what I want. I always want to be a world champion in everything that I do. And, I mean, I can tell you, look, Carol didn't survive. She had another cancer, and 3 years later she died, and it was awful. It was losing the most important person in my life at that point. And yet the growth that I experienced during that time was probably the greatest growth that I ever experienced. The depth of love, devotion, finding out that I could be there for somebody, sacrificing what I thought was important in the small world, my own time. Giving, family, being strong for other people. It was like amazing.
Wow.
It was an amazing, amazing period, which actually, I mean, I would prefer to have none of the growth for her to have survived, to be less evolved. But that just wasn't the way it was going to play out. I mean, this was a game we were not going to win. She wasn't going to win. But I still, the person that I became as a result of this, is somebody that I'm proud of. I can look in the mirror and say, I was a hero for myself. Every day, I was strong. My posture was great throughout the whole thing. I walked my talk. Mm-hmm. And I'm a better person now than I was before. Mm-hmm. So it was a gift. Wow. I mean, it really was a gift for me. A gift that I would prefer not to have gotten, but I take it and I go forward with it.
Right. That's so powerful. And it's so amazing that, you know, that you have and you still do look at it in that respect, because I think a lot of people don't, you know, get to see those things that you do learn, you do build resilience, you do get to see yourself in contrast to a situation like this that you did not welcome, but at the end of the day, you didn't resist it either. And I think that's really powerful for people to hear. And I hope that people take something from that and learn to adapt that to their own stories.
Well, I mean, I wish I could say that I came up with the idea of acceptance as a good idea, but I do welcome the opportunity to accept things that I don't necessarily like if they're going on, because, you know, my effectiveness is so much greater. I'm not in a negative state. I mean, when I accept things, it doesn't mean I like them, but it also doesn't mean I'm passive about them. So I wish I had come up with the idea. but I think that there are a lot of smarter people than me around that figured that out.
Well, I think you're pretty smart, and I'm sorry, of course, to hear about your wife. And, you know, but I also just wanted to, you know, to tell you that I don't think a lot of people understand that that's an option to accept things that are uncomfortable. I don't know why that's not talked about more, or why it's not something that's more mainstream, or, you know, because I think human nature is to kind of go inside ourselves and try to resist what feels uncomfortable. I don't know why we're not raised, or we're not wired maybe to accept those things. Do you feel that way? Or, you know, it's something you have to make, like, I feel, a very conscious choice to do.
I just think that it's a story we've been told. I really do. I just think that it's been a comfortable story for us to feel like, yeah, I resist what I don't like. And that there is a new story, and there are people that are telling this story. It's you, it's me. I don't want to, like, get caught up with, like, who we are, but, like, Eckhart Tolle talks about it all the time. I'm not him, but, like, I mean, he's devoted to the expressing and teaching for people to accept what is. And there is the isness of a situation. And, you know, for people who are listening who wonder about, like, simple examples, the most simple example I've always felt is, like, sitting in traffic, which nobody wants to do. Nobody plans on it. And it's always a bummer. So people are, like, resisting it. I can't believe I'm sitting in traffic. I can't believe this. Why didn't I leave earlier? I should have gone the other way. I should have not listened to Waze. I should have listened to the other GPS. And they're in a state of resistance. There's a lot of self-anguish that goes on. There's a lot of beating themselves up that goes on. They're not talking to their partner or their spouse because they're annoyed that they didn't come up with a better idea. But at some point, and then in that state, that's when we pull off the road and make bad mistakes and we try and speed up and not get anywhere. Right. But then sometimes we get to that place, we go like, well, you know what? I'm in traffic. I guess I have to call the people where we're going and let them know we're going to be late. And I'm here. Maybe we'll listen to some music, or we'll finally talk about that thing that we wanted to talk about. It's an opportunity. And it doesn't mean we don't like the traffic, but we're better at dealing with it when we accept it. But acceptance also is not just a word. I think you know that. It's like, it involves practice. It involves, you know, changing your state. So what you do is you look every day for chances to accept things that you don't want to accept. Whatever. It can be small stuff. It should be small stuff at first, I would think.
Yeah, and it builds that muscle too. And eventually, I think you just somewhat are used to accepting situations when they're uncomfortable, or it's just something that happens, I think, a little bit more automatically when you begin to be aware, like you're saying. But and also the stress that does come up from resisting or from not accepting is. It creates this disease. It creates, like, you know, there's so much that goes on within our bodies internally when we're always in a state of resistance. And I just, you know, I hope that people understand that this is, like you said, mind, body, spirit. It's all connected. So when we, you know, our thoughts and our aggravation and our frustration at life every single day has a direct correlation to what happens to us physically.
Yes, and if people even are questioning that at all, you know, the idea, like, well, really, does thinking that way create disease?
But people don't. You know, people don't believe that. Yeah.
Right, but they do notice every now and then that when they're in a negative state, like, which can come from resisting something that is, maybe their neck gets tight. They may not turn that into, like, you know, serious disease. But that's just another example of disease in our body, that if our muscles are tight and our neck is tight, when we get a headache, that's like a surface thing that may not be that terrible, but underneath, deep inside us, the same thing could be going on a cellular level. We can end up pretty sick by resisting. And even if we're not, we tend to be unhappy when we're resisting. So there's nothing to lose by making
effort
to accept things, and a real lot to gain. And by the way, when you talked about practice, practicing something to get good at it, I'm often asked for, like, tips, especially sports tips. You're like, well, what do you do to be mentally tough? And it's like, there is no shortage of tips. And there's no shortage of tips that you have, that I have, to give other people. There's books, there's videos, there's speeches. But I would say to people, like, if there's a tip that seems to resonate for you, don't worry about the rest of the tips. Practice that tip a lot. And if you practice it a lot, eventually it's not a tip. It just folds into who you are. And you go from somebody like with acceptance to like, I'm practicing acceptance. I'm practicing acceptance to be somebody who's an accepting person. It's just, you don't have to try anymore. And that's what all, so much is about habits, that if you practice it enough, it's no effort anymore. Hopefully absolutely. You're practicing the right things.
Absolutely. But, I love that you said that. Yeah.
Well, a lot of us practice resisting and we get great at it.
Exactly.
Which we don't want to be great at it. So,
yeah. And that's something too that you just said that is really great for people to be aware of what are they practicing every day? What are these, even maybe they're so subconscious, there's some agreements we made with ourselves a long time ago, you know, but if we're not aware of it, then how can we change it? You know, so do you take people through kind of an exercise of getting that awareness up and, you know, up to the surface so that not only you could find out what that is, but they could see what that is?
Well, what I do with people is, I mean, people call me up and they say, hey, you know, will you work with me? And I'm like, well, what do you want to work on? Well, I don't know. I'm not that happy. I mean, it's not about happiness generally necessarily. I mean, mm-hmm. It is in the big picture about happiness, but it might be like, you know, I'm just like, I'm kind of flat at work, or I'm not winning tennis matches, or I'm not getting along with somebody, or, you know, my teachers are like, you know, picking on me, whatever. There's whatever it happens to be. So I listen to them, and I never give advice. I stopped doing that when I was about, I don't know, 40, because I found out that people don't really listen to direct advice. Sometimes mm-hmm. if they ask, they do, but for the most part, it doesn't seem like people do. So what I would do is I would basically feed back to people what they just said to me. You know, it's like, well, you know, it's like, I'm not getting along with so-and-so. And my response to that is like, so how's that working for you? How's that story working? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're really difficult. Okay, they're really difficult, but how's the story working that you're not getting along with them? Not good. Okay, so what if you could simply flip your story from I'm not getting along to this person to like, I'm fully engaged in a complete way with the people that I interact with. But I'm not. No, I know you're not, but that's where you want to go. So once they mm-hmm. have that new story, it might be 5 or 6 new stories that they're working on, they have their list. They read it in the morning and they say, these are the things, these are my intentions. These are the things yep. I'm working on. Maybe I won't even have opportunity for 4 of them, but one of them came up today in an interaction with somebody else and I wasn't getting along with them. And I felt like, oh, wait, it's my intention to be fully engaged in a really complete, healthy way with everybody. Mm-hmm. Here's a chance. And I'll use whatever I can in the moment to practice it. The first time I practice it is not who I am. But if they keep practicing these intentions, eventually with good work and good attention to the intentions, they do get there. They get closer. They may never even get there completely, but they're going to move away from, I'm not getting along with that person. Maybe they now get along with them 80% of the time. And then they can look at the 20% as a new intention. So to me, it's a relatively simple thing. And I take a little bit of heat when I announce to the world that I think that changing is easy. I think that that's another story that we've been told that really is not a great story. The change is painful. It's difficult. It takes so long. I don't know. I don't see that. I mean, I do see it. I see that people say that and they buy into that story. Mm-hmm. But what if they had a different story that change is easy? And
right.
And then we could see what would happen with them. So
yeah.
I think people can change pretty quickly, Erica.
I do too. And I think we're really soft-wired. And like you said, if we make a conscious effort to, you know, again, build these muscles and create these routines, anything is honestly possible. So Bob, could you tell everybody where they could find you and your book and you know, get some
sure.
info on you? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I appreciate you asking me that. Well, I have a website that's boblitman.com. or if you can't remember my name, it's livethebeststoryofyourlife.com. My book is for sale everywhere, I guess. I mean, it's on Amazon, mm-hmm. it's on barnesandnoble.com, it's in the bookstores, various bookstores. I have a Facebook page, which is Bob Litwin Author. And my, well, I mean, that's the best place to, any of those places are the best places to reach me. My website has all of my contact info, and I'm always answering emails when people send me their notes. I'm pretty good on turning it around.
Oh, great. That's so nice. And so for everybody that just, I want to make sure they know the spelling, it's BobLitwin.com, BobLitwin.com. And again, your book, which I absolutely love and was written so beautifully and such an inspiring way of living, actually. I just think it's going to help a lot of people, is called Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. Bob, thank you so much for being on with me. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you for joining us, and stay well.